This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is all to the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North, for the week of August the 15th, 2016, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television from north and south of the 49th parallel. I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Greg David.
And we would like you to put your television on mute for episode 210 of TVA, the podcast. Greg, you know what it is, don't you?
No, what?
It's the Ides of August!
Oh, yes, it is. And Diane's not here to fight us, so we could just go with it.
But no, the best was the last time Diane actually fought us on it, and somebody else said it. Like, it was actually somewhere, it was referenced somewhere else as the Ides, and she was like devastated that it would actually be called the Ides somewhere else, because it completely justified my position. Anyway, it's the Ides of August, and we're here to talk about a scant number of things that are happening. Yeah, see, this would have been a good opportunity. Had we done forethought, had we done planning, we could have, like, given out medals for something.
Oh, yes, we could have.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, perhaps we can have a little bit of a conversation about the impact of the Olympics on Canadian television.
Yeah, we could, because actually, just off the top of my head, I can think of a couple of things that we could talk about. So let's do that.
Maybe that'll be our think piece. Yo, we haven't done a think piece in a while.
No, we haven't.
Yeah,
so we haven't been doing much thinking.
Well, that's true. It is summer.
Yes.
It is hot town, summer in the city.
Too hot to think.
Yes, exactly. I feel like, as soon as you said it that way, I felt like I should be playing like Buster Poindexter, and then I reeled myself back really quickly.
Thank you.
Feeling hot. Anyway, soon we'll have to cue Greg up for a sound effect. But we'll give him plenty of advance warning, because until then, it's time for the beverage update. And Greg, the beverage update, what do you got for us this week? Again, it's between the two of us as to how we're winning this thing or not, because without Diane, like, Diane's probably still winning. She's technically in Rio, therefore I think she's winning.
Well, she's not technically in Rio. She is in Rio.
Well, we don't know that. We're not there, really.
Well, I did see. As a matter of fact, I can weigh in on her behalf, because she did post, I think it was on Facebook today, that her nap time had been interrupted by somebody knocking on her door and dropping off a sample of tea.
In Rio?
In Rio. Somebody dropped off some tea. So we can say, I don't know whether she had consumed it today, but we can certainly say that she did have tea. Delivered to her room. So that's her. She's weighing in with that.
Okay. Well, there you go. So probably she already beats us.
She probably, yes, she does. Because the only thing I have in front of me today is an Oasis brand juice, and it's a kind of a pineapple mango mix. I didn't feel like having anything boozy tonight. I decided to just... sure.
Let me clarify this for our listeners. Yeah.
Yep, go ahead.
When Greg says Oasis brand juice... That ain't highfalutin, folks.
No.
That's the opposite of highfalutin.
No, it was on sale. I think it was 99 cents a liter.
Oasis is you don't think yourself is like Tropicana, which sounds like a cheap ass brand because it's Tropicana, but it's actually a pretty expensive brand of juice.
Yeah, Tropicana, that's a premium brand of juice with you can get it with no pulp, some pulp, and lots of pulp. So
here's the Tropicana's I almost spilled it. Oasis is often drink.
It is a drink. Yeah, it's probably one step up from Tang. The only thing I didn't have to do was add water.
By the way, I think we've already got the show title as being One Step Up from Tang.
Yeah, so that's what I've got. So I make no bones about the fact that I don't win. I'm sure that you will win, because what have you got?
I don't have anything too fancy, and I don't have a fancy read here. But I can do a short read, technically. So Jack Daniel's, for the past several years, so technically we're not talking about a bourbon, we're talking about a Tennessee whiskey here. The difference between the two basically is that Tennessee whiskey, sour mash whiskey, requires 80% corn, whereas bourbon only requires 50% corn.
Okay.
So other than that, everything else is pretty close as to how it's put in barrels, how the amount of year, all that stuff. But when you do a Tennessee whiskey, it has to be at least 80% mash, which is corn. So over the past few years, what they've done is they're putting out special editions for every single master distiller that they have.
Okay.
So they put out Master Distiller Series number 1 and 2 over the past couple of years, and they just came out this year with Master Distiller Series number 3. It's been in the States for a while, but it's just kind of crept its way up into Canada. So that's, Jack Daniels was a pre-bourbon drink for me. I started drinking Jack Daniels, and so I like the different iterations of Jack Daniels, and so that's what I'm enjoying tonight. It's a very short read, but I feel like I'm disrespecting Sam Elliott if I don't do it, so this is a very short one. Here it goes. The third of only 7 men to have served as master distiller is Lemuel Lem Tolley. As Mr. Jack's grandnephew, Lem carried determination to continue the tradition of making Jack Daniels with the consistency of those before him.
You know, Sam just turned 72 last week. I think he'd be very proud with that reading.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I like to think that as I keep doing them, I'm getting more and more of the nuance of Sam Elliott.
Oh, I think you are. I got hints of leather and oak in that.
Well, there you go. I think I've succeeded then. What leather, oak,
chocolate,
you know, a little bit. What if you can smell like old horse saddle? I think I've
yum.
Then I think I've achieved what I needed to. Folks, there you go. That's been the beverage update, and that leads us into a section of the show that we like to call the calendar.
Sorry, I don't have my sound effect.
It's okay. You're going manual. I understand. That's okay. Calendar, again, not too full at this point. Not a lot happening, but it's August. So, I mean, we got some finales, a couple debuts or debuts, as you might want to say it.
Yes.
So here on the Ides, we're going to go a little bit past the 29th, which would be 2 weeks from now, because there's only one other thing on the calendar to talk about anyway. But we'll start off with a week from today, which is the 22nd, the season finale of 19-2.
Yes, season 3, it's closing out. They just killed off a secondary character. This character interacted with one of the main characters, and they met their end in a horrible way. I won't spoil it for anybody because it'll just be fresh when the podcast goes live. So I don't want to.
I won't spoil it either. But I will just say, rest in peace, Detective Munch. That's all I'm going to say.
No, it wasn't Detective Munch.
I thought he was on to bring the entire universe together.
No, and it wasn't the guy that plays that Ice-T plays either. I can't remember his name, his detective name. But good news for 19-2 fans, because they were already in production on season 4, because they had announced earlier on in the spring that there would be a fourth season of 19-2. So that's good news all around for fans of 19-2.
And also probably Bravo's greatest decision is to continue to pick this show up, the original French show, and keep it going in English.
Yes, absolutely.
Also, on the 22nd, the debut, or the debut, or the debut, of Your Morning. So we spoke a couple of episodes ago about the fact that there was going to be a changeover at the CTV.
Right.
With regards to their morning programming, and this sounds like it's going to be their bright and shiny new morning show, which makes me cringe just thinking about it. Not because I disrespect anybody who's on there, but just the concept of morning show generally makes me cringe.
Yeah, it's updated. It's new. It's they've gone younger and hip. They're out of Scarborough. They're right in hip downtown Toronto at CTV's headquarters at 299 Queen Street West. Your Morning is going to debut, like you said, on August the 22nd. We're going to have Ben Mulrooney, Anne-Marie Medawake, Melissa Grillo, and Lindsay DeLuce, and Kelsey McEwen. That's the whole cast. They've made some announcements. I don't have them on hand, but they've ruled out that they're going to have some musical guests the first day. We're not really sure what this is going to be like. We certainly do know that they're going to have weather, and they're going to have hard news, and they're going to have celebrity guests come in. But obviously, they're going to be skewing a lot younger than the Canada AM folks did. I think there's probably... You either love Ben Mulrooney or you hate Ben Mulrooney. So it will be interesting to see what the viewers say about this show when they tune in. That's all I'll say at this point.
Who watches morning television?
You know, you'd be surprised. I mean, I'm not one of those people. I know you're not one of those people, but I do know that when Canada AM was canceled, there were a lot of people that were upset and very vocal about it. When Jennifer,
I'm guessing stay-at-home parents are your biggest demographic.
Well. Yeah, I would think so.
If you're skewing younger anyway. I mean, the other subset of people that I'm thinking are retirees.
Yes, exactly. And those are the people that were upset about Canada AM. Now, does that mean that those people are going to tune in and watch your morning? I'm not sure. That's why I'm really interested in seeing what they're going to do differently about this with this program, because as you have just said, young people aren't tuning in and watching morning shows. They're off to work or, you know, they're online doing other things. So it'd be very interesting to see what happens. But, you know, like we've already said, there's somewhat of an older demographic that watches morning shows. And if you love your show, you know, and you've been loyal to your show, you're very upset by the changes. You know, Jennifer Valentine was let go from Breakfast Television. There was a huge outcry. So it will be interesting to see whether people tune in and watch your morning. And I'm actually going to be there. It's debuting on Monday the 22nd, and I think I'm going to be there on the 22nd or the 23rd to watch how it all works and how they put it all together. There's going to be a live audience portion of the show as well, so that's going to be a little bit different from the traditional morning shows. And I'll talk to some of the executives, and I'll get the skinny on what's going on with the show and what they're hoping to do with it.
Here's the thing. Morning programming in general... what bothers me the most, and this may sound entirely ironic, coming from the fact of what we're doing right now, but morning banter. Like, to complain about banter really is self-critical of almost everything that I do in podcasting.
Sure.
Because that's essentially what it is. But I mean, there's a special kind of morning banter that gets filtered through, basically, it would take all the flavor out of a Folgers crystal, is what I'm saying. The filter is so thick that what's left is just a weak ass Nescafe.
Okay, I don't disagree. I can't add to that. I agree with you.
And that being said, I hope against hope that someone will eventually find a way to break that. But everything's got to be like when you have a serious story on a morning show, it becomes scary because the tone of a morning show is supposed to be light.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Happy. And exactly. It's like, what if something serious happens? What do we do? It's like, you know, we're talking about something serious and now we'll find out how to dress up your turkey for Thanksgiving. It's like, what the hell?
No, you're totally right, and I actually had that happen to me. I was supposed to be on Canada AM years and years ago to talk about television, and there was a plane crash, and needless to say, they cut my segment because, of course, they didn't need some goof coming in and talking about primetime television when a tragedy had happened. No, you're absolutely right. But then again, like, we've already discussed this. You know, a lot of people are getting their news off of Twitter first thing in the morning, and they go to their news sites online. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if your morning is going to bring anything new to the table other than an address change and a wholesale change when it comes to the cast, but we'll see.
Here's to hoping. I think exactly. That's kind of like when we raise a glass on this podcast, that's kind of what our cheers is. Here's to hoping. On the 26th of August, the debut of 4 in the Morning on the CBC. Now, I don't remember hearing any advanced stuff about this, so fill me in on what this is.
Yeah, this is way back in April this was announced, and this is from a company called Serendipity Point Films. It's created by Ira Parker. It's 8 half-hour episodes. It's an unconventional comedy spiked with a touch of magical realism, Anthony. It follows 4 friends in their 20s as they navigate life in the unpredictable, emotional, but illuminative hour of 4 a.m., dealing with themes of life and death, love and heartbreak, friendship and betrayal. It's a series about self-discovery, disappointment, and clawing after dreams that always feel out of reach.
So, wait, this is the entire setting of this is 4 in the morning, like every episode?
Yeah, they're going to Yeah, they're going to sit in, from the clips that I've seen, they've been sitting in bars, like, you know, late at night, and just kind of waxing poetic about going, about what's going, been going on with their lives. So Friends, but instead of a coffee shop, it's diners and bars.
So like Train 48 in a bar.
Train 48 in a bar. There you go. The cast.
Except scripted, probably.
Yeah, scripted for sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but it's unconventional. Because it's unconventional, right in the copy.
And it's spiked with something. I don't know what.
Yeah, spiked with a touch of magical realism. I've actually seen a couple of, you know, they've been showing the teasers because CBC has been throwing in teasers for the fall and late summer during their Olympic broadcast. So I've
seen a place for us all.
Yeah, a place for us all. So I've seen a few little teasers about it. But other than that, I haven't seen anything about it. I don't really know anything other than what I just read out to you.
Okay, there you go. And a big event, even though we will probably be recording the night before this, it's worth mentioning a couple of times. On the 30th of August, as we wrap up the month, the series finale of Motive.
Yep. And I think if we haven't talked about it, I think we've already talked about this, but the ratings have been very good for Motive in its final season. And so I feel as though Bell Media kind of pulled the trigger a little bit early in announcing that this was going to be the last season for the show, because I think it clearly has life left in it. The stories have been fantastic so far this season, and they've been getting some really great guest stars. They've just had Tommy Flanagan, who was on Sons of Anarchy, and he did like a 4-episode arc, and he was just fantastic. I'm going to miss this show. But of course, with Bell, they've got some other shows waiting in the wings. They've got a show called The Disappearance coming up. They've also got Cardinal, which is a high-profile series for them, as well as Saving Hope. So, you know, when one door closes and two or three doors open when it comes to the CanCon, I just kind of wish that they could have, you know, a half dozen shows on all at the same time coming out of Canada. That would be kind of nice.
It would be. I understand that this is one of those shows where, because it's under such tight parameters in terms of the style of the show, there's a danger of feeling like, you know, you've seen the pattern before.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And thankfully, they haven't reached that point yet with the story. Some of the stories have gotten quite outlandish, but they always end up bringing it back in and reining that in and making a good story out of it. It has been airing down in the States, so they've got some American money coming in as a second window broadcast, and they're a few weeks behind us here in Canada. But no, Motive had a great run, and you know, I'd rather see the show go out on top the way that it is, although I guess that's kind of the way that it happens in Canada, is the show, rather than peter out, it goes out on top. Every show goes out on top.
Yeah, well, I get the feeling there's someone just flipping a coin at some point.
No, I think like, you're right. I think yeah. You're right, because I think, honestly, you know, Diane and I had kind of spoken about this between ourselves, is that we thought that it was probably going to be between Saving Hope and Motive over which show this was going to be the final year for, and it turned out that it's going to be Motive. So it may end up that it's Saving Hope's next year.
Yep. I get the feeling that they decide new show or old show, and someone flips a coin, and that's how they make the decision.
Yep.
Which sounds very scientific, I know, but such is the way we do things here at TVA, the podcast.
This is true. Yes, yeah. Very high tech. We use abacai.
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 I believe we use abacai. That would be the name of a bad production company right there. And you'd have like a really bad like graphics card of like one abacus, then two, then three, then four.
Yes, just
abacai.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, you'd have a whole bunch of them spelling, like, with all the spelling out the letters.
Yes.
Yes. We need to start up a production company just for that
just
title.
Just for that. Amazing.
Yes. Greg David and Anthony Marco start up Abacai Productions. Wow. So on the History Channel, you know what? For history, to be fair... there's actually a series which is kind of historical.
Did we close have we closed the calendar?
Oh, sorry, we've closed the calendar. Thank you, Greg. Thank you for reminding me. I didn't want to miss that. Because if the calendar was open for the next 2 weeks, mayhem would ensue.
There would be mayhem.
History is, in this case, it's a historical theme, but it's not too far off. It's basically, what's the best way to put it? It's like storage wars in Nazi Germany.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But it is. I mean, like,
it is.
It is.
It is. No, you're right. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Okay. And I'm not trying to say that in a derogatory tone. Oh. I'm just trying to say that the idea is that, like, all of the shows on History Now, there has to be like a twist to catch. Like, you can't know. We can't tell you. You don't know. We're gonna hold it off till the last second. And like right before every commercial, but
will they find that this is what's happening behind this wall? Come back after this commercial and find out.
Anyway, Hunting Nazi Treasure.
Yes, Hunting Nazi Treasure. It's from Corus Entertainment and Channel 4 Television in the UK. And what's interesting about this show is it's going to be, like you just said, it's going to be the journey to locate and return art pieces that were stolen by the Nazis at the end of the Second World War.
Which, completely noble. I love that idea.
And with the pedigree involved in this, Robert Edsel, who's the author of The Monuments Men, which was made into a movie with George Clooney, he's involved in this. He's the founder and chairman of the Monuments Men Foundation and the Preservation of Art. So he's going to be helping with the production and very involved in the show as well. So yeah, no, this is real. This is going to be very interesting, and I think it's going to be educational. I know a little bit about the history behind this stuff, so I'm fascinated by it. This team is going to follow the trail of stolen items. They're going to go into caves and castles and museums and private collections. And they say that once they find these items and that they prove that these are the real items that were stolen, they're going to return them to the rightful owners. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this show rolls out. They're going to be using original documents, declassified intelligence reports and Nazi dossiers and everything. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
I love the concept, and if it was a documentary, I would watch it. But I get the feeling what we're going to have, as we have with a lot of these reality shows, is this faux constructed narrative to try and make it more intense.
Yeah, they're going to have recreations, I'm betting. I think all these stories are going to be pretty intense, don't you think? I mean, I don't think that there's going to be anything that's going to be, they're going to have to play up the drama for, do you think?
No, for sure they are. And here's why. Because the actual timeline of finding these things is probably like 10 to 20 years of boring paperwork miasma.
Oh, sure. No, they're not going to tell. Okay, sorry. I thought you meant the actual stealing of the stuff.
No. I'm talking about the actual finding of the stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, the research. No, they can't show footage of that. Everyone will fall asleep.
Exactly. And so in a documentary, you might painstakingly go over the step-by-step, we went and talked to Dr. So-and-so at this university here to find out, what the blah, 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 blah. And we pulled out this document out of the archive. And at that point, most people who are watching, most other pseudo reality shows about this stuff are falling asleep. But that is interesting stuff. But it's just when you put that filter or that layer on top of we need to turn this into an intense, intense show where you don't know what's going to happen around the next bend.
And now we go to the microfiche.
Yes. Not the microfiche. Like I say, I hope they don't do that. That's all I'm saying. I hope they don't do that. Please don't do that. Then I'll be interested and then I'll watch it. But as soon as the first time I hear dramatic music going to a commercial break, will they find? No, I'm done. I'm done right there.
Well, you're going to be done because that's how they make TV now. They can't make TV any other way.
The TV has passed me by, Greg, I tell you. Crave TV has ordered season 3 of Letterkenny, the one word that seems like it should be two. So Letterkenny, wow. Well, it is.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. Thank you.
I don't expect Letterkenny is going to be one word.
Letterkenny.
So Crave TV, for those of you who have forgotten, is one of Canada's answers to Netflix. And they're creating original content, not quite as much as Netflix, but some. And Letterkenny has been one of their more successful shows. They promote the heck out of it. And it probably gets more promotion on Canadian network television than most of the network shows do.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's Crave TV's first original series. It has been renewed, like you said, for a third season. They just ended up, they've just wrapped production on the second season up in Sudbury, and they'll be back in Sudbury to do season 2. What's interesting about this is, it's 6 episodes, by the way, but what's interesting is, I was looking for the numbers, and I know that I was told, I was at a presentation where they didn't actually give out the numbers for Letterkenny. But it is it's the number one show on Crave TV. The one stat that they do trumpet in the press release is the 18 million views that Letterkenny Problems, the shorts, have gotten on YouTube. So that's a really impressive number, the 18 million. But we don't know what the number is for the actual Letterkenny show on Crave. Not that that means anything. I mean, obviously the number is not huge if they're not giving out that number. Right. You know, I don't think that it's important necessarily, but it is interesting that they haven't announced that. But good news. I know a lot of people that watch this show. I really liked the first season, so I'm happy for it. I mean, it's kind of like FUBAR. I don't know if you've seen the movie FUBAR, but it reminds me of that. Trailer Park Boys also, obviously, maybe an R or X rated Corner Gas, if that's possible.
I like the idea of shows like Letterkenny. The six pack of shows on a streaming service, allows for a don't get me wrong. I understand that there are a lot of actors, writers, directors who love the concept of the job security of having the full seasons like we used to have back in the good old days. Mm-hmm. But this is just an example of this is one of those things that 5 years ago wouldn't have existed.
Exactly.
It's not like it's been taken the place of something. It just wouldn't have existed.
Yep.
And so now it's a thing, and now it's creating jobs, and now it's creating opportunities. And because it's the risk is generally lower because the cost is lower, you get a more unique, a more diverse cast of actors, different opportunities for writers and all this. So, I mean, I love the approach that this kind of show takes.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So there you go. Season 3 of Letterkenny. So we got some what is it? Limbo announcements. We don't know what's happening with a couple of these shows on Super Channel. Like Super Channel's been trying a couple experiments over the past couple of years. And I know that about 9 months ago that you went to go investigate Slasher a bit?
Yeah, it was. This is a sad story, and this is something that now that I posted this story a little over a week ago, I'm actually finding out that this unfortunately is becoming a common occurrence in the Canadian television and film market. Super Channel, which is owned by Alarco Entertainment, and Alarco Entertainment, they were granted creditor protection back in April. Simply because they didn't have the money to pay anybody. Now, in addition to streaming or having the rights in Canada to air things like Major Crimes and Rizzoli and Isles and Sons of Anarchy, they were also throwing money into some homegrown movies and some television shows. And Slasher was one of them. We had a first season that aired on Slasher. Tiny Plastic Men, which it was in its third season of production in Edmonton and has been on Super Channel and nominated for a few Canadian Screen Awards. And What Would Sal Do, which was another show that I went up to Sudbury to watch film. And in all three cases, these shows are in limbo because of this protection that Super Channel's head office has gotten. The shows have been released back to the producers. So if there is going to be a second season of Slasher, it's not going to be on Super Channel. The producers have to, which is Shaftesbury, have to shop that around. If they want to have a second season, they need to shop it around to another network. Tiny Plastic Men was in the middle of filming season 3 and now have no money left to finish filming that third season. And What Would Sal Do has filmed its episodes. They were edited and in the can and now have no broadcasters. So New Metric Media have to shop this show around. And there's a real danger that it's never going to see the light of day unless they find a broadcaster. Crave TV actually would be a perfect broadcaster for What Would Sal Do because it kind of has that same kind of ribald tone and pushes some boundaries. But yeah, I mean, speaking to the folks involved in all these shows, they're really sad because as this quote, they're not going to be moving forward with these series and no idea when and if they might ever be. So really sad news.
By the way, just letting you know, I'm giving you bonus points this episode for using ribald tone.
Did I pronounce it the right way?
I think that worked very well.
Ribald.
I think ribald. I'm giving you bonus marks.
Thank you.
If you don't stop talking about it, I'm going to take those points away. Okay. Now, don't be proud over that. Okay. I'm just saying.
Okay.
But so this is, I think this is one of those scenarios where as much as we just lauded the idea of these small opportunity production shows, this is the flip side of that same scenario, which is it doesn't take much. You're not going to see a show which is going to be greenlit on CTV or Global or CBC all of a sudden go through something like this.
Right.
You know, it might not get renewed. It might not get the episode you want. It might not get the order you want, all that kind of stuff. But it ain't going to go through this. You're not going to get CCAA involved. And so, I mean, this is the scenario. And it sucks that a couple of these shows, especially the ones that are kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to have wrapped up a season and not know. It's another thing to do this. But to have essentially done principal shooting and then not know if it's going to be shown anywhere, that's really tough.
It is really tough. And, you know, so the reality is the producer, the other thing is that the reality is that the producers are still on the hook to pay those bills. So that's doubly sad for a company like New Metric Media, which are just really starting out. They're also the folks behind Letterkenny. So that's good news that it was renewed. And they've also got some other projects in the works, a miniseries with Rogers. It's going to air on City in the next year or so. But yeah, I mean, it's a real kick in the crotch for a company like them, because they're still on the hook to pay all those bills and didn't get any of that money out of Super Channel, because of course Super Channel doesn't pay the bills until after, you know, all the costs have been figured out and everything. So they're not going to be seeing any of that money anytime soon.
It was a borderline call, but your bonus points have been taken away for kick in the crotch. Just saying. Anyway, it's okay. You're back to zero. So okay, you're not the negatives.
I'm used to being there. Anthony, yeah, I'm used to being on zero.
You're still neutral. You're still revenue neutral on your points for this episode. Houdini and Doyle has been canceled after its single season with much anticipation and aplomb. This show sprung onto the airwaves, and I think there were a few of us who were skeptical.
Mm.
But I think the bigger problem was it didn't find the niche audience that a show like this has to be able to grab some wedge of the pie. And I don't know that it grabbed that wedge of the pie.
No, you know, it debuted in the UK, like half 6 months before it debuted over here. It kind of had lukewarm reviews, in the UK. Fox was the broadcaster here down in the States. It was a summer show. They threw it on the air in the summer. They weren't going to be putting it up against any of the heavy hitters in the fall or at midseason. So it kind of went on to their schedule with low expectations. Global broadcasted here because it's a co-production between Canada, the US, and the UK. And, you know, once there was just nothing. We saw a press release about the ratings for Private Eyes, Jason Priestley's drama. We saw nothing about Houdini and Doyle. And when there isn't when you don't see a ratings release about a co-production here in Canada, that's pretty bad news. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I was anticipating this show. I thought it was going to be great. I saw the first episode. I liked the first episode. I saw the second episode and I didn't like that. They couldn't figure out what the show wanted to be. Yes, it was set in Victorian England, but it had a lot of modern day references as well as a strangely modern soundtrack, which was jarring for me. And I think, unfortunately, here in Canada, anything that's a historical drama is automatically going to be ranked up against Murdoch Mysteries. And unfortunately, it just didn't it couldn't compete with a show like Murdoch Mysteries. They do things better with Murdoch, and a lot more entertaining. Unfortunately, I mean, David Shore was behind this show. I mean, he's the guy that co-created House. I mean, he's won Emmys, but it just goes to show you that just because you've got that great pedigree behind it, it does not mean that it's going to be a successful show. And unfortunately, that's a case for Houdini and Doyle.
Right. It seems like Canadian niche right now is trending, and it has been for the past few years, towards science fiction.
Yes.
And it's still kind of lockstep in there. Yep. And whether it derivates from that anytime soon remains to be seen, because there are still plenty of Canadian science fiction shows that are getting made every single year. And I get the feeling that sometime within the next couple of years, we're going to wander from that and we're going to find some other niche that we're going to explore. And that's not to say that all Canadian science fiction will disappear, but there's a glut of it right now.
There is, I mean,
there's a lot of Canadians compared to the other styles of shows that are being made.
You're absolutely right. And the other thing is, you know, you look at a show like X Company, which is also a historical drama, but then it's got the Second World War stories behind it to kind of bring that story up and bring interest to it.
Sure. So there you go. A couple good stories about shows that are being renewed or coming back, and a couple not so good stories, but as is the goings on of Canadian television. Where can they go if they want to find out? You've got your running tab on shows that have been renewed or not.
If you go to TV-EH.com and actually, if you just Google Scorecard, that will bring up the latest news on the shows that have been renewed and will be back for the 2016-17 broadcast season, or whether they won't be. And so I just added Houdini and Doyle to that list last week, but that's where you can get the most up-to-date information on everything.
And if there's a show that you, you've been a fan of for years and they're not renewing it, understand that if you email your complaints to @Greg_David on Twitter, Greg can often get shows brought back.
Absolutely. I do have that. I really appreciate you throwing my Twitter handle out there, because yes, I absolutely can. I have the power to make shows come back. That's why Michael Tuesdays and Thursdays is coming back, because I had a finger on the pulse of CBC.
Exactly. I believe that. Before we get out of here today, I do believe what is dominating Canadian television over the past week or so, and one of the reasons why we don't have Diane on the podcast with us, is the Olympics in Rio. Home of the green pools that smell like farts, apparently.
Yes.
The green pools that smell like farts. Oh, do I want to go to Brazil? Now, the amount of Canadian television coverage devoted to the Summer Olympics is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Now this is if you have a cable package that includes sports channels.
Yes.
Because basically what you have is CBC and every iteration of CBC. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you've got all these Sportsnet channels from Rogers, because they've partnered up with Rogers. Do you have TSN as well, I think?
Yes, yes.
So like all of the Canadian channels, Canadian sports channels, are showing the Olympics. Now, there's good and bad in that. It means that if you are a fan of a sport that, you know, not doesn't generally get a lot of coverage, then perhaps you are going to see something about it. Because, Lord knows, you want to see all the trials which go on ad infinitum about every single small thing that happens. If you're someone like me who wants something a bit more distilled, it's more problematic. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't mind flipping through the channels every now and then to find out what's showing. But I think about, you know, from when I was a kid, you know, whether it was 76 or 80 or 84, watching, and you know, you would have one feed to watch and you would have this highlight package and that was basically it. I don't know if this is better or worse, Greg. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't made up my mind yet.
Yeah, it is really tough. And I've been watching watching the coverage daily, and it is a little bit frustrating. I don't pay for the TSN package, so I don't get those. So that's automatically some programming that I don't get to see. I do have the Sportsnet channel, so I do check those out. But what is interesting, actually, is that the CBC website and the apps are fantastic. If there's something that you want to watch, like table tennis or judo, you know, something that there's no way it's going to be in the primetime lineup, you can go and you can watch those live using the apps and also on your computer. So those have been really great. I mean, I have an upper end streaming package through Rogers that I've talked about before. So I haven't had any problems watching anything. I was watching some boxing this afternoon because there was a Canadian involved and it wasn't being shown on any of the channels that I get. So I've really been impressed with that. Like you said, though, I mean, there's such a glut of stuff that, you know, you can become quickly overwhelmed. But just from an app and streaming package, coverage of the Olympics so far, I've been really happy. The other interesting thing is, and I know that one of our listeners, Dave, had brought this up the other day, is that he noticed that there have been a lot of Australian voices during Canada's coverage. And that's just simply because CBC has to grab the international Olympic feed, just because they don't have the number of bodies to cover everything that's available in the Summer Olympics. So they're just grabbing that feed. So that's why you're hearing Australians covering off the synchronized swimming that was going on today, and also the bike road races. But I've been liking the coverage so far, but I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. I like to see the Canadians do well, and I'm a homer and cheer them all on. So I'm the wrong person to complain to about the Olympic coverage.
Yeah, there's, like I say, there are some sports that I don't mind watching. It's just when you're watching you watch like the medal portion of any event, and you're generally, you can get through it. It's when you have,
we don't need to see the six days leading up to it.
Yeah.
And the three, and you keep thinking that you're tuning in to watch the 400 finals when you're actually only watching the heats, the four or five heats leading up to it.
Well, so like with all of the sports now, it just seems like they're trying to one up each other on the amount of events that they can come up with. Like, so it started with track and field, right? Like, I mean, there's the 100. There's the 100. There's the 200. There's the 400. There's the 800. There's the 1500.
Yeah. 5,000.
Is there a 3,000 too?
I don't know. I think it jumps from 1500 to 5,000 and then 10,000.
There's the 5,000, 10,000, there's the marathon, and then there's all the relays, and then there's all the hurdles. And it's like we're just trying to create all these events. And then I've noticed that more and more with swimming as well. It's like, you know, how many different strokes? It's like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? I don't know, but there's too many of them. That's all I figured out. And like with cycling even, it wasn't enough that you had people cycling around the track racing each other.
Yep.
Now we've got sets of three and four of them racing around the track cycling with each other. And it's like, it seems like all these sports are trying to create new events so that we've got more to do.
Wait till they bring back tug of war.
See, now that's what I mean. Like for me, swimming should be one event. They're in Brazil. They drop you off into the ocean and see how far you can swim. And whoever swims the longest and survives wins the gold medal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Like it's an endurance thing.
Sure.
Same with track and field. You've heard of those ultra marathoners who'd like run for like 6 days?
Yeah.
They should be winning a gold medal, as far as I'm concerned. Like everyone else, you know, like Usain Bolt, as fantastic as he is at the 100 meters, okay, that's fine. But can you run 85 kilometers?
I want you on the IOC. Forget Dick Pound. He's got a great name, but let's get you in there.
All I know is if I had some of that IOC graft, I'd be a wealthy man. That's all I'm saying. Wow. So we thought that was going to be a think piece, but that wasn't really a think piece. That was more just a rambling. Let's just say that perhaps we echoed some of the morning banter that
we did. We just did a whole episode, a whole segment of your morning.
We just did banter right there.
Yeah.
Wow. And now the weather.
It's hot.
That's it. It's hot. It's really, really hot. Greg, where can people find you when you're not hanging out here doing the TVA podcast once every couple of weeks?
You can find me manning the TVA Twitter account, which is at TV underscore EH, sorry, or my own, which is at Greg _ David. And then if you go to the TVA website, you can find our links to our YouTube channel. We've got an Instagram spot, got all kinds of different things. What about you, Anthony? Where can people find you?
You can find all the other podcasts that I do at anthonymarco.com and find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And remember, in a couple of weeks, you're going to be paying attention because the auction is coming up, Greg.
Yes, we will. That's going to be the second week of September. So when we talk next, I'll break down some of the cool stuff that we've had donated for the auction.
Here's what I want to do.
Yep.
I'm currently purging all my DVDs.
Yep.
Oh, I'm going to put together the Anthony Marco DVD set.
Okay. But we have to go and get them.
Well, I'll find a way to get them to you.
Really? You'll ship them somewhere?
Charity, Greg. It's for charity.
Do you have any Canadian?
Yes, I do. I've got Twitch City.
Oh.
Uh-huh. I got Twitch City. I've got a season of Kids in the Hall, I think.
Okay.
I've got Wonderfalls.
Oh, Wonderfalls. Yes.
Yeah. See, great I can show. Put together a Canadian. Okay. A Canadian-themed DVD package. Some of them may be open. Some of them not open.
Gently loved.
Gently loved, exactly. It'll be the Anthony Marco picks.
Spelled P-I-X.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But it will be sponsored by the Abacai Production Company.
Yes, brought to you by Abacai.
Exactly.
Sounds good.
Anyway, that's about it, folks. That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.